Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, working at the museum meant learning two histories, the one preserved in the exhibits and the one left behind by whatever still walked the halls.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
It is, and 855-853-4802 is the phone number to call. You pick up, you pick up one of these, and you can talk into it.
Yes, I have a ghost story I would like to share with the show.
And then we'll play it back. All you have to do.
855-853-4802 is the phone number that I found on the bathroom wall. And it said, call for a good time. Is this a good time?
It's your new promotional piece. Instead of spending money on, like, Facebook ads and all that kind of stuff, you just go around to all the neighborhood haunts and write the phone number and website on the bathroom walls.
It's a great idea. We should put send stickers up like that.
There
and,
you go.
And people would go and put those up, and then they'd call and complain to us of why are you doing this? Yeah, you know, that's something you know you don't see a ton of anymore. I don't know. I don't go out much either. So I don't know. I mean, I would say bathrooms have improved in the last handful of years. I think there's like less graffiti and shit, or I don't know. Maybe I'm just not in graffiti.
Well, we're not going to the sketchy bars you used to go to. You know,
that's
back
true.
When you could only afford the cheap beers, and that's where you had to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I don't like it when you go to a urinal though, and you're standing there, and there's a poster right in front of you. Okay, because I don't want to be reading while I'm pissing next to somebody else who's pissing. Like, it just seems kind of awkward. And because of my vision, I kind of have to back up a little bit. So then you got to back up away from the urinal, and then you're trying to arc pee into the, you know, spot, and it doesn't
even better if there's a QR code on it. And then you're like
fumbling with your phone.
Like,
I think I might like that gym membership.
Yep. Honest to God, I've thought of advertising the show on those sort of things, just with a QR code, because it's a great place. You're sitting there, like it's like Vicks Breaks and More, some tanning studio, some tractor lot, and Real Ghost Stories. What are you going to look at?
If you can find the right place for it, like maybe a haunted hotel that has like urinals, banners and stuff, you could put it up right there. So if people are already visiting those places because they're interested in the ghost stories, in the lore, it might be a cool way to pull some people in.
Even more targeted. Yeah.
Yeah. You
know, I was just thinking the masses. I was thinking, you know, at the local mall,
right
at the cinema one and two. Yeah.
If it's still standing.
Exactly. If it's even creepier, because if you're in there and you're like, this is a creepy ass place, here's some place that sells ghost stories. I don't know. I don't know how much that is. It might be kind of a fun one to try. I've been thinking about trying to do some non-traditional advertising, you know, outside
you
of YouTube.
Right there.
That urinal might be it. Urinal ads. It's run through my mind. Like, you know, I think it'd be great. And you start getting calling.
Yeah, hi, I'm taking a leak right now. But I wanted to tell my ghost story. And hang on a second.
Sir, do you have a ghost story?
Hang on, I said. Look, you're going to advertise on the urinals and the porta potties. I'm going to need a minute, all right? I got a ghost story. You're going to want to hear this. Trust me. Hang on.
And he's one of the guys that talks while he pees and farts at the same time, so it'll be perfect.
As I was saying.
If you're just listening, you're like, what the fuck's going on? I have a telephone microphone here now. That is my new favorite toy. So that's what's going on. You can watch us on YouTube now, by the way. So that's pretty fun. Be sure to check us out there and press subscribe. Coming up on the program, this next story is about a museum, working at a museum, and its history, because you know people that sponsor the program like to kind of tie into the stories that we tell here. One of our supporters today is the International Children's Museum of Satanic Arts and Dark Arts or something. It's like a regular children's museum, and they want to pause and say. And say, you know, give us a chance before you judge. And I think when you see their commercial, you too might give them another chance. it looks like a grand place for the kids. That's coming up after our first story here. And it goes like this. Emma had loved old houses for as long as she could remember. While other people hurried through museums, she lingered. She was fascinated by worn hardwood floors, hand-carved staircases, fading family portraits, and the quiet reminder that generations of ordinary lives had unfolded beneath the same roof long before anyone thought to preserve them. Historic houses never felt lifeless to her. They felt lived in. When the position opened at one of the state's best preserved historic house museum, she applied without giving it much thought. The home had been built in the 1850s by one of the area's wealthiest families and had remained in the family for decades before eventually becoming a museum. It was a kind of place where every room had a story, every piece of furniture had a story, and every tour guide eventually memorized far more names and dates than they ever imagined possible. Emma loved it. From her first week, she enjoyed talking with visitors, answering questions, and watching people discover details they might have otherwise overlooked. Most guests came because they appreciated architecture or local history. Some simply enjoyed walking through a beautifully preserved home. School groups wandered through almost every weekday. Families filled the halls on weekends, and every season seemed to give the old house a different personality. In the spring, sunlight poured through the tall windows. Autumn wrapped the grounds in color, and Christmas transformed the home with decorations that looked as though they had belonged there for generations. Then there were the people who asked about ghosts. That was one subject the museum board preferred the staff avoid. The museum existed to preserve history, not to become another haunted attraction. During training, every employee was given the same polite response. If visitors asked whether the house was haunted, they were told that some people had reported unusual experiences over the years, but the museum focused on the documented history of the home. It usually ended the conversation. Sometimes it didn't. Every week, someone would quietly mention something they couldn't explain. A woman asked why the nursery had felt so much colder than the rest of the house. An older gentleman wondered where the man in the black coat had gone after directing him towards the dining room. A family thanked one of the volunteers for spending several minutes talking with their daughters upstairs. There hadn't been a volunteer on the second floor all afternoon. The visitors weren't trying to convince anyone they'd seen a ghost. They simply believed they had encountered someone who worked there. The employees reacted differently than the visitors did. No one rolled their eyes. No one became overly excited. One guide occasionally heard footsteps upstairs before opening the museum. Another employee admitted she sometimes smelled pipe tobacco in the study, even though smoking had been prohibited inside the house for decades. The groundskeeper preferred not to lock the building by himself after dark, though he never explained why. Someone would mention an experience. Another employee would nod. Then everyone simply went back to work. It wasn't that they all believed the house was haunted. It was that none of them seemed surprised anymore. About 6 months after she started working there, Emma bought a small black notebook. She wasn't trying to investigate anything. She simply found it fascinating that complete strangers often described remarkably similar experiences. At the end of each shift, if someone had shared an unusual story, she'd spend a few quiet minutes writing it down before heading home. She never recorded names, only the date and a brief description. Over time, the notebook began filling with familiar patterns. Visitors repeatedly mentioned the nursery feeling unusually cold. Children occasionally waved towards upstairs windows or smiled at someone the parents couldn't see. Several people described being greeted by individuals dressed in period clothing, assuming they were museum volunteers, only to discover no one matching that description had been working that day. The notebook wasn't filled with frightening stories. It was filled with similarities. That was what fascinated Emma. The entries came from people who had never met one another. They visited in different seasons from different parts of the country and arrived expecting nothing more unusual than a history lesson. Yet many left describing the same rooms, the same figures, and the same quiet feeling that someone else had been sharing the house with them. Near the end of her second year, another guide happened to notice the notebook lying on the table on the staff table room. Instead of asking why Emma was keeping it, she smiled. She admitted she had often wished someone had started writing those stories down years earlier because after enough time, they all blended together. Visitors came and went. Employees came and went. Memories faded. The notebook might become the only place those experiences were ever preserved. Emma hadn't thought about it that way before. The museum carefully documented every painting, every chair, and every piece of silver, and every photograph hanging on its walls. Curators knew exactly where a piece of furniture had stood a century earlier and could trace the ownership of nearly every artifact inside the house. No one documented the stories. From that day on, the notebook somehow became more important to her. Not because it proved anything, but because it preserved something in the museum. The museum never intended to collect. In its own quiet way, it had become another archive of the house. One filled not with antiques or photographs, but with moments that visitors carried away with them long after their tour had ended. For nearly 4 years, every unusual experience in the notebook belonged to someone else, and the entries slowly began changing. One spring morning, Emma unlocked the front door just before opening and distinctly heard footsteps crossing the upstairs hallway. Assuming another employee had arrived before her, she climbed the staircase, expecting to find someone preparing the rooms for the day. The second floor was empty. She almost didn't bother writing it down. A few weeks later, she was arranging brochures near the front staircase when she clearly heard someone descending from the second floor. She looked up, expecting to greet a volunteer, but no one appeared. Another evening, while straightening books in the study after closing, she caught the unmistakable scent of pipe tobacco. It lingered only a few seconds before disappearing completely. She recorded those experiences exactly the way she recorded everyone else's. There were never any theories or explanations in the notebook, only simple descriptions of what had happened. Before long, the visitors' stories and her own experiences occupied the same pages. By then, she had stopped wondering whether she would ever have a story of her own. She already did. One experience she never forgot happened during the first snowfall of December. The museum had closed early because of the weather, leaving Emma alone to finish paperwork before locking up. She had completed the closing routine hundreds of times and knew every room by heart. She checked each window, turned off the lights one by one, and made her way upstairs for one final walk through the house. Outside, fresh snow had covered the grounds in silence. Inside, the old house seemed even quieter than usual. Christmas decorations were still in place, and the soft glow of a few remaining lights reflected off polished wood that had been walked on for generations. For a brief moment, it felt less like a museum and more like someone had simply stepped out for the evening and returned at any moment. Nothing seemed unusual until she turned towards the staircase. A single footstep sounded behind her. She stopped. The sound stopped too. Thinking she'd imagined it, she waited a few moments before walking again. Another footstep, then another. Each one matched her pace perfectly, remaining several steps behind her without ever getting closer. She turned around, and the hallway was empty. Portraits lined the halls. Every bedroom door stood exactly where she'd left it. The fading daylight filtering through the tall windows was just enough to illuminate the long corridor. There was no one there. She continued towards the stairs. The footsteps followed. Oddly, she never felt afraid. It was simply the unmistakable sense of someone, or that someone, was quietly walking beside the last employee leaving the house for that evening, accompanying her through the one final round before the doors were locked. Whatever had shared that hallway with her never hurried, never tried to get her attention, and never gave her the impression she wasn't welcome. It simply remained there until her work was done. When she stepped outside and pulled the heavy front door shut behind her, the footsteps stopped. She sat in her car for several minutes before opening the notebook. For years, nearly every page had begun with a visitor's experience. That evening, she simply wrote the date. Then she described the footsteps. She never tried explaining them. Months later, while reading through one of the older notebooks, she came across an entry written years before by a visitor she'd long since forgotten. It described hearing slow footsteps in the upstairs hallway while no one was there. Emma read the entry twice before setting the notebook in her lap. She had completely forgotten recording that account years earlier, yet every detail sounded familiar. Different person, different year, the same quiet footsteps following through the same upstairs hallway. She closed the notebook and smiled. Emma continued working at the historic house she had come to love. She still gave the same tours, and she still welcomed visitors who were looking for history. And every so often, another guest quietly described the woman in period clothing, the footsteps upstairs, or the smell of pipe tobacco, without knowing anyone else, had reported the very same thing. Emma would simply thank them, wait until the tour was over, and add another entry to the notebook she kept locked in her desk. The museum's official records told the history of the house. Emma's notebooks told the story of everyone who never seemed to leave it. There you go.
I love that.
That was good.
What I think's interesting, I love that last part about, because it's like that at so many locations. They don't necessarily want to admit that the location is haunted, but they know everything about the house. They have behind the scenes things that's all filed and pictures and things they keep. They know absolutely everything in that house and where it came from. Or a lot of times the original furnishings were gone and people bring them back. And so they know all this stuff, but they don't keep track of the paranormal stories. And so I just like that. Like, you know, they're curating the house and she's curating the paranormal stories. I love that.
I do too. And I like it in any situation. If somebody feels like their house is haunted or their workplace is haunted, keeping a journal of what happens the day of the week, the time of day of the month, all that kind of stuff. If you do it well enough, if you keep track well enough, you can actually see sometimes patterns of certain days of the week, certain times of the year where certain activity happens, and then other times when nothing happens. So I like the fact that she was smart enough to start writing these down. It was kind of cool.
And there's I'm sorry, Tony.
I was going to say, you got to do that because when I'll remember, you won't. You got to. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead, Carol.
Then you read the book and you're like, oh, I totally forgot about that. But there are locations that they keep a journal for the different paranormal groups that go in and out. Yeah. And I think that's interesting too, that completely different people might experience something extremely similar. And I just think that's fascinating to keep journals for the groups just to write in what they experienced and what happened.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a great idea. And I could see how you would just be like, the stories kind of, you start to notice there's quite a few of them. It's like, I think I'll just write them down. And then I think it just turns into something extremely interesting and fascinating.
It really does. I love that they can, especially to cross-reference it and go, oh, has anyone had this experience before? And then to see, oh, yeah, looks like someone has. That's, you know, very...
Well, like the footsteps thing happens to her looking back through there. Then yeah. She realized it had happened to somebody else before her.
Right.
Yeah.
I think exactly. It's interesting.
It is. It really is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. So as we were saying earlier, you know, that's a story about a museum there. This is another museum that they feel like they got a bad rap, and they said, hey, you know, we'd like to advertise on the program. And we said, you know, okay. So I hope you don't hate us for it. It's the International Children's Satanic Museum and of satanic arts. So here we go. Give them a chance. Just think, you know, the kids, if we got a little more time, they want to do one more fun thing this summer, here's an idea.
Welcome to the International Children's Museum of Satanic Arts and Demon Craft, where young souls are shaped by the ancient powers, and every visit leaves a permanent mark. In our finger paint sigil studio, children paint living symbols of the void in fresh crimson ink that never quite washes off. Then gather in the junior summoning circle, where they join hands, speak the true names of the four demon princes from the flashcards, and pour their juice boxes into the open mouth of the abyss. At the sacrifice station, each child places their most beloved stuffed animal on the altar and watches as it is claimed by the dark confetti blood rains down while Mr. Baphomet smiles and accepts the offering. In the craft lab, they mold their own familiars from living clay and void dust. Once finished, the creatures open their eyes and they never close them again.
Birthday packages include a personal demon assignment that follows your child home.
And a family portrait taken in the shadow of the great Baphomet itself.
So bring the whole family to the International Children's Museum of Satanic Arts and Demon Craft,
where curiosity opens the gate,
and the gate never closes.
Visit today, open from the first light
until the final screen. Important notice, guests of the International Children's Museum of Satanic Arts and Demon Craft may experience side effects, including, but not limited to,
sudden possession, speaking in unknown tongues at the dinner table,
spontaneous stigmata during nap time,
the permanent relocation of a child's soul to the lower planes,
nocturnal visitations by horned figures,
and the irreversible sale of familial bloodlines
to the outer dark management is not responsible for any eternal damnation,
loss of free will, or children who return home with new names.
Enter at your own risk. The void is already watching.
There you go. Yay. I mean, seems like a nice place for the kids, you know?
Boy, it makes Chuck E. Cheese look like crap when I was younger, you know?
It does.
I would rather go to something like this than going to eat a pizza and watching some mechanical mouse sing.
I know. I mean, those were kind of scary, actually.
They were creepy.
Let me ask you this, Todd. Do you remember this? Okay, so in our hometown, we didn't have a Chuck E. Cheese. We were a little more ghetto than that. And we did have a roller rink called the Spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
And the Spectrum had a semi-broken Chuck E. Cheese cheerleader animatronic at it. And when they had birthday parties, it was like it had a stroke. So like half of it worked and the other half didn't. And it didn't really, it just kind of moved around because it really wasn't programmed to anything, because it was just a single thing. And it was creepy. It was like if it was a Chuck E. Cheese character that ran away and got hit by a bus and now works at the Spectrum.
I never saw that, thank God, because I would have gone running in the other direction for sure.
Yeah. It was creepy.
There is a guy online who does YouTube videos, and he has the whole setup. He's got the whole Chuck E. Cheese thing, and he is actually working on programming it to like current music and stuff like that.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting to watch. But even looking at a good one in good shape, how the hell did they think kids would not be frightened by this stuff?
I don't know.
But then kids didn't seem to be. Because the kids would be like, we want to go to Chuck E. Cheese.
I wanted to go for the arcade games and that stuff more than I wanted to see the show. It's the Rock of Fire Explosion is what it's called.
Right.
And there was Showbiz Pizza and there was Chuck E. Cheese. Rock of Fire Explosion is actually Showbiz Pizza, which was bought by Chuck E. Cheese later. I know this shit because I Anyway, but there's a whole documentary about the Rock of Fire explosion and that guy that does the videos.
Oh, really?
It's really fascinating. Yeah. Look at it. I forget what it's called. It might be called Rock of Fire Explosion or something. But it's fascinating, and it goes into the whole history of the animatronics and how they found a few left in a warehouse. It's insane. It's a great escape the world for an hour and a half documentary that you can just kind of get engrossed in, and you're like, I don't know why I'm so fascinated by this.
But or maybe, I can't quit.
Or maybe it's just me. It is. It's like one of those. Anyway, that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want access to the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, all that stuff, check us out on Patreon. Just search Real Ghost Stories Online and Apple Podcasts as well. And on YouTube, if you're not already there, find us there and press subscribe and tell us your ghost stories in the comment section on YouTube. Until next time, for Carol and Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.